Chapter 22. It is easier to stay out than get out. Pudhead Wilson's new calendar. The train was now exploring a beautiful hill country and went twisting in and out through lovely little green valleys. There were several varieties of gum trees, among them many giants. Some of them were bodied and barked like the sycamore. Some were of fantastic aspect, and reminded one of the quaint apple trees in Japanese pictures. And there was one peculiarly beautiful tree whose name and breed I did not know. The foliage seemed to consist of big bunches of pine spines, the lower half of each bunch a rich brown or old gold color, the upper half a most vivid and strenuous and shouting green. The effect was altogether bewitching. The tree was apparently rare. I should say that the first and last samples of it seen by us were not more than half an hour apart. There was another tree of striking aspect, a kind of pine, we were told. Its foliage was as fine as hair, apparently, and its mass spurred itself above the naked straight stem like an explosion of misty smoke. It was not a sociable sort. It did not gather in groups or couples, but each individual stood far away from its nearest neighbor. It scattered itself in this spacious and exclusive fashion about the slopes of swelling grassy great knolls, and stood in the full flood of the wonderful sunshine. And as far as you could see the tree itself, you could also see the ink-black blot of its shadow on the shining green carpet at its feet. On some part of this railway journey we saw gorse and broom importations from England, and a gentleman who came into our compartment on a visit tried to tell me which was which, but as he didn't know, he had difficulty. He said he was ashamed of his ignorance, but that he had never been confronted with the question before during the 50 years and more that he had spent in Australia, and so he had never happened to get interested in the matter. But there was no need to be ashamed. The most of us have his defect. We take a natural interest in novelties, but it is against nature to take an interest in familiar things. The gorse and the broom were a fine accent in the landscape. Here and there they burst out in sudden conflagrations of vivid yellow against a background of sober or somber color, with a so startling effect as to make a body catch his breath with the happy surprise of it. And then there was the wattle, a native bush or tree, an inspiring cloud of sumptuous yellow bloom. It is a favorite with the Australians, and has a fine fragrance, a quality usually wanting in Australian blossoms. The gentleman who enriched me with the poverty of his formation about the gorse and the broom told me that he came out from England a youth of 20, and entered the province of South Australia with 36 shillings in his pocket, an adventurer without trade, profession, or friends, but with a clearly defined purpose in his head. He would stay until he was worth L200, then go back home. He would allow himself 5 years for the accumulation of this fortune. That was more than 50 years ago, said he. And here I am, yet. As he went out at the door he met a friend, and turned and introduced him to me, and the friend and I had a talk and a smoke. I spoke of the previous conversation, and said there's something very pathetic about this half century of exile, and that I wished the L200 scheme had succeeded. With him? Oh, it did. It's not so sad a case. He is modest, and he left out some of the particulars. The lad reached South Australia just in time to help discover the Burra Burra copper mines. They turned out L700,000 in the first 3 years. Up to now they have yielded L120,000,000. He has had his share. Before that boy had been in the country 2 years he could have gone home, and bought a village. He could go now, and buy a city, I think. No, there is nothing very pathetic about his case. He and his copper arrived at just a handy time to save South Australia. It had got mashed pretty flat under the collapse of a land boom a while before. There it is again, picturesque history Australia's specialty. In 1829 South Australia hadn't a white man in it. In 1836, the British Parliament erected it still a solitude into a province, and gave it a governor and other governmental machinery. Speculators took hold now, and inaugurated a vast land scheme, and invited immigration, encouraging it with lurid promises of sudden wealth. It was well worked in London, and bishops, statesmen, and all parts of people made a rush for the land company's shares. Immigrants soon began to pour into the region of Adelaide and select town lots and farms in the sand, and the mangrove swamps by the sea. The crowds continued to come, prices of land rose high, then higher and still higher, everybody was prosperous and happy, the boom swelled into gigantic proportions. A village of sheet iron huts and clapboard sheds sprang up in the sand, and in these wigwams fashion made display. Richly dressed ladies played on costly pianos, London swells in evening dress and patent leather boots were abundant, and this fine society drank champagne, and in other ways conducted itself in this capital of humble sheds as it had been accustomed to do in the aristocratic quarters of the metropolis of the world. The provincial government put up expensive buildings for its own use, and a palace with gardens for the use of its governor. The governor had a guard, and maintained a court. Roads, wharves, and hospitals were built. All this on credit, on paper, on wind, on inflated and fictitious values, on the boom's moonshine, in fact. This went on handsomely during 4 or 5 years. Then of a sudden came a smash. Bills for a huge amount drawn the governor upon the treasury were dishonored, the land company's credit went up in smoke, a panic followed, values fell with a rush, the frightened immigrants seized their grips and fled to other lands, leaving behind them a good imitation of a solitude, where lately had been a buzzing and populous hive of men. Adelaide was indeed almost empty, its population had fallen to 3,000. During 2 years or more the death trance continued. Prospect of revival there was none, hope of it ceased. Then, as suddenly as the paralysis had come, came the resurrection from it. Those astonishingly